coming in as Lube. Hilladijk center net.
Flame bench, there's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
Here it is, put it in the wind tunnel.
Yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby.
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Okay, happy Tuesday, and let's get another hour of Flames Talk underway with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Tuesday, May 6th. Welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale is on now. Save big on safes, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for hanging out with us, whether you're listening live or on the podcast. If you are listening live, text lines open at 960-960 as we say hello to Wes. Hello, Wes. What's going on?
How are you, buddy?
I'm good, man. I'm good. It's been a busy stretch, busier than I was expecting for early May when it comes to Flames news, as the Flames signed Matt Coronato to his long-term extension on Saturday. We spoke with Matty on Monday's program. Craig Conroy joined us on the weekend, and lots of reaction available for you on that contract on the Flames Talk podcast feed right now. And that was kind of the first domino that I think needed to fall this summer, Wes. I think from a priority list, I think the Flames and Craig Conroy and his hockey ops group looked at Coronato as the biggest immediate contract they needed to sign, because And we will talk about Dustin Wolf, but nothing can be done with Wolf until July 1st. So you've got time to wait on the Dustin Wolf front. But with the guys who are pending RFAs right now, Coronato, Zeri, Ball, Frost, Klapka, a few other names that are out there as RFAs right now, Coronato was the guy who had the potential to get the largest deal. Most lucrative deal, longest deal, all that type of stuff. And so because he was the guy that had the most potential of signing a long-term deal, the guy that was, like, they were aiming at a long-term deal all along with, if they could make it happen, and obviously they did make it happen on Saturday, that was the first domino I feel that needed to fall. And now there are a lot of other things on Craig Conroy's checklist that he can start to get to once they knew that A, this was put to bed, and B, they knew what the framework of that deal was going to look like. Bridge, long-term, dollar figure, all that type of stuff, and now they do.
Yeah, and the other sort of rationale that I would add to that list is, you know, based on this past season, Matt Coronato's, and I'm leaving Dustin Wolf out of this, but based on this past season, so of the RFAs, Matt Coronato's ask was going to be the biggest.
Yes.
Right? Matt Coronato was on your list of restricted free agents, the top performer. And so in that way too, you never want the agent for one of your key guys coming back to you and saying, well, if you're willing to pay Connor Zeri this and you just signed him last week, well, shouldn't my client get, I'll just say double that as a, you know, as a general argument. And so I think to take care of the big one and the in many ways the best one early, and that's not always positive or always possible, I'm sorry, but I think in this case it made a lot of sense for the Flames.
Yeah. So what's next on Craig Conroy's to-do list? What's next for the Flames to kind of start checking off when it comes to some of their decisions? And maybe we'll start, this isn't necessarily the chronological order of anything, but these are kind of the things that come next. And the remaining RFAs are somewhat interesting. And in terms of the higher profile RFAs, they got to figure out Kevin Ball, Connor Zeri, Morgan Frost. They put Adam Klapka in that conversation as well. Mm-hmm. Klapka, of course, a real nice, surprising, and encouraging finish to his season. When Craig Conroy joined us on the weekend on Flames Talk, I asked him about, okay, first domino to fall, where are we on some of these other RFA conversations?
Some of the guys a little bit farther along, and then others not much at all yet. So you know, we're kind of in that gray area on a couple guys, and we do think there's a few other guys that we might be able to get done sooner than later, but some we got to get working on. Okay. I'll be honest. Yeah.
So that was General Manager Craig Conroy with us over the weekend.
Let's stop for a second.
Yeah.
Let's read between the lines there.
Yeah.
If you're betting on, you know, the which ones might be easier and which ones might take a little longer, who's in what bucket?
So I think Kevin Ball is probably the next domino to fall. So with Ball, you've got a guy that I think the Flames have had a pretty good idea where they want to go for some time. Like, I want to say November, December, the Flames have had a pretty good idea, I think, where they want to go with Ball. I think the Flames are very open to a 5 or 6 year extension here for a guy they believe they know exactly who he is. And I think even for Kevin Ball, I think he's got a pretty good idea of what and who he is. And so I think you needed to wait to see what the final cap number was going to be before you could really go down the extension road. And then by the time you knew what the cap number was going to be, I think a lot of players and even the team was like, you know what, let's just tone it down a little bit for the playoffs. Let's see if we can make the playoffs and put all our focus in there. But the framework, I think, of a Ball deal has been, at the very least on the Flame side of things, I think the framework has been they've had a pretty good idea where they want to go. And I mean, the Ball camp is at a pretty good idea where the Flames want to go. So I feel like that one is, whether chronologically it's the next one, I think that's the one that I think is closest to being done, or sure, closest to having the middle ground you want on.
Which ones worry you about how long they might take?
Frost.
Yeah.
Yep. And I think Zeri will get done. I don't know the timing on that, but I think it's going to be a 2-year bridge is kind of where I feel like Zeri's going to end up.
Yeah. That one crosses me as probably take a little while too. And I say that because I think the Zeri camp, I think the Zeri camp's case would be bolstered by some comparables. I think they'll want to wait and see. And I don't have a name in mind, but I think they'll want to just wait and see some of the other numbers that potentially come in off the RFA and even UFA market and try to strengthen. Because really, I think it's going to be a bridge, and I don't think the dollar figure is going to be wild.
Yeah.
Now Connor Zeri is going to get a nice raise and he's going to be well paid and all that, but I do think in their case, it probably behooves them to wait a little and just be able to say, well, look at so-and-so.
Frost is the most difficult one. He's the oldest, like we're talking about a guy who turns 26 in the matter of like 10 days, less mm-hmm. than that, May 14th. So he'll be 26 in just over a week. So you've got a 26-year-old, a year away from unrestricted free agency, a 26-year-old who has had a couple of frustrating seasons in a row, had just 12 points in his 32 games as a member of the Flames. And while I think everybody understands that it wasn't a guarantee that he was just going to slot in and instantly be a fit, I also, at the same time, think it's fair to say the Flames fans were expecting more in, you know, a third of a season from mm-hmm. Frost than what they got.
Yeah. As they should have been.
Yeah, agreed.
If you're feeling a little bit disappointed by the so far returns with Morgan Frost, you should be.
And the Flames are.
Yeah.
And I think the Flames were looking for more. And yet, I also think they acquired him for a reason. I also think that they still believe there is significant upside in this player. But what does a contract look like for a guy that you don't know what he is? He's gone from 46 points to 41 points to 37 points. He's turning 26. So it's not like, especially at forward, it's not like you see a lot of guys take skyward trajectories mm-hmm. at this stage. Like, what are you is the real question. Are you a guy who's going to flirt with 20 goals? Or are you a guy that's going to be a little bit closer to 15 and a little bit closer to like mid-30s points? And,
yeah.
and that's what the Flames are, I think, a little concerned about when it comes to what type of term you give a guy like Frost. You know, with Coronado, there is plenty of reason to bet on what he's going to do over the next 7 years. I don't know how confident you are to bet on even 4 years for a 26-year-old in 8 days.
Well, and I think a big part of that too, and four makes me cringe. I'd honestly rather go two. And part of that is that I need some proof from Morgan Frost of what he's going to be and how he's going to fit. And does that mean Morgan Frost is a third line center moving forward? You've heard me say on this show, and I'll repeat it again, I think the Flames need to be able to invest some time in Connor Zary as a center moving forward to find out if he can be a center. Morgan Frost is sort of in the way there. So does Morgan Frost just become the third line center in Calgary for the next few years? Hey, maybe that's what they have in mind, but what's Morgan Frost going to do well? He is a very cerebral and a very skilled playmaker, right? Is he a guy who can be a big impact for you on your power play? He has those tools, but you need to see the results of it. Can he sit down with Flames development coach or player skills coach Matt Stajan and talk about how Matt Stajan had to reinvent himself to be a guy who could be trusted more defensively to really kind of capitalize and prolong his stint at the Saddle Dome, right? Can Morgan Frost possibly be a guy that when Michael Backlund can't be your shutdown center anymore, that Morgan Frost can do it? I don't see that in Morgan Frost. I don't think there's enough tenacity to his game, but what is Morgan Frost going to do well? Because that is going to impact where he fits, right? The Flames are going to draft some centers. They're going to continue to try to find young centers. At some point, where does Morgan Frost fit on that center depth chart?
It's why the more and more I think about it, like, I don't think either side wants to go to arbitration, but I wonder if the threat of arbitration on either side is going to be significant in getting to the final endpoint. Mm-hmm. I think ideally, if I'm the Flames, 2 years is what I'd be looking at. It gives you, you're buying one UFA year from them. So that is a little incentive on the Frost front. Hey, we're going to buy one UFA year. We're going to give you multi-year, but you know, we don't know what you are. So, and then with kind of like the promise of, okay, we're going to do a 2-year deal here, but if we like what we saw in year one, then let's agree to reconvene the following summer and then let's go extension. Very similar to what happened with Sharon Govich. Conroy signed Sharon Govich immediately after acquiring him. I think it was the next day. And essentially,
I think it might have even been done that night.
Might have been the same night. Yeah. And essentially what my understanding was is let's do this now, but let's see what year one looks like. And then let's talk again in the summertime. And what do you know? And whether we like year one of Sharon Govich's or the first year of that contract being signed or not is another. That's what they did. They said, hey, let's go through the first year. Let's reconvene the following summer. And if we both like the direction, then let's agree on we'll do an extension then. And you can do something like that with Frost. So I would do 2 years if I could, if I'm the Flames. And honestly, if they're not willing to go 2 years, I might either go to arbitration and take the 1 year award or agree on a 1 year deal and walk him to UFA. I don't think walking Frost to UFA is as painful or detrimental as it could be in other situations, because then you got a trade asset, which to your point makes it so that maybe there, if you're feeling like Zary should be at center, well, now you've got an asset potentially in Frost, who's an expiring contract, who's a pending unrestricted free agent. So that makes him attractive at the trade deadline. You can always sign him in season if you like the way things are going. I mean, honestly, they did that with Zadorov. Mm-hmm. And it what happened? Zadorov went to unrestricted free agency, tested it for a few hours, came back and signed with the Flames for another 2 years. And I feel like there's a lot of similarities in terms of, obviously, they're different positions, different players. One guy's 6'12 or 7'9 or however big Zadorov is, and Frost is a different player. But very similar in, like, what the hell are you? The Flames had no idea what Zadorov was and sure. still didn't after that first year, as good as he was at times. And I kind of feel the similarities are there with Frost. So he'd be one of the rare cases where I'd actually be all right if they, as a second option, walked him to unrestricted free agency.
I like that option better than going beyond 2 years.
Yeah, and, I agree. And it would be 2 years yeah. as my number one, and then see what happens from there.
Yeah, because you have to be careful about, yeah, you need centers and you're trying to build up the middle, but you also have to be careful about just creating a glut of centers that all sort of fit the same spot on the depth chart.
Middle six centers.
Yeah.
Right.
Like you can only have, and I would even say, you know, beyond middle six, I would say, you know, a glut of guys who maybe can't be above third line.
Yeah.
And that's where maybe I'm wrong on Morgan Frost, but that's where I see him so far. And so I think you could make a mistake of saying if you're Craig Conroy, well, we traded for this player, so now we have to keep him for a few years. And I do see, probably doesn't sound this way, but I can see how Morgan Frost fits in with the future of the Flames. It's just the onus for me is on Morgan Frost to, like, where do you fit in? Are you going to now invest in becoming a better defensive player so you can fit that sort of role? Or are you going to, now that Ryan Husk is your coach and you're in a system that requires a little bit more competitiveness, are you going to be harder on pucks? Are you going to win some more puck battles? Like, I think it's up to Morgan Frost to prove that he can fit in the Flames' future and not the other way around.
Yeah. I think if I could do, you know what? And if I'm the Frost camp, I'd rather take the 2 years than the 1 year, as much as getting walked to RFA. Like, if the Flames aren't willing to go more than 2 years, which I don't think at this point they should be, and I kind of feel they're looking at 2 years as their sweet spot. If the Frost camp isn't willing to do the two-year deal, like, say, 2x4, mm-hmm. something like that, then, yeah, give them a one-year deal and see what and take your chances on both sides.
Yeah, I'm even a little bit hesitant based on the declining offensive totals in the last 3 years to have that number start with a four.
Yeah. Maybe they can get it a little bit lower.
Yeah.
Text line 960-960. This says Ball 5x5. I don't know if you, like, I think that 4 to 5 is the range that you're looking at on an AAV, depending on the length. A 5-year deal, you might be able to get it closer to 4.5, 4.25. I feel like 6 times 4.5, 6 times 4.75 might be a little bit more realistic on a 6-year deal, but I do think it'll be a 5 or 6 on the Ball front. That's kind of what I'm anticipating. I'll be surprised if they don't end up getting a long-term deal done. Not a guarantee, but I'd be a little surprised if that one doesn't go long-term.
And John, I just think I was going to say glut, and I don't think that's fair, but with the exciting crop of right-handed
right-side
defensemen you have in your system, locking up the most sort of dependable left-hander you have, it makes perfect sense, right? You hope that Jan Kuznetsov or an Ilya Solovyov or Etienne Morin's a lefty, yep. correct? You hope one of those guys can join the fray sooner than later, and yet with the Prex and Bruce Stevich is coming, you know, Kevin Ball is going to be such an important piece that lock him up for 5-6. I'm all for it.
Nice bounce back year from Morin, by the way, in the queue and point per game in the playoffs as Moncton's off to the queue finals.
So yeah.
Really nice year for Morin.
Etienne Morin was made aware at training camp that they were a little bit disappointed in the condition that he arrived in. I don't know if that's something that has been talked a lot about publicly, but Etienne Morin didn't come in bad shape, but didn't make the gains in his off-season conditioning that
they were hoping for.
I'm assuming that means his results from development camp to training camp either weren't a whole bunch better or maybe leveled off. That's why he didn't play a preseason game before he got sent back. And from all accounts, both on and off the ice, I think they've been really excited by how he's responded.
This says, given Frost's meh-ness, will this end up being a bad trade? I don't think so, because he didn't. I mean, you gave up a guy you weren't keeping in Kuzmenko. You gave up a guy that I think change of scenery was important in Pelche.
Yeah.
Yes, you gave up the extra pick in there. But I think in Frost, you filled a potential need, and you're going to get at least another season to take a look at him, I think.
Yeah.
And Farabee gives you a nice option. I know the contract isn't great, but like they don't care what the contracts look like right now.
I don't think this trade can ever turn into a loss. I really don't. I think, you know, what looked like a real win at the time Craig Conroy made the trade, and I think he'd make the trade a bunch of times over, because Farabee and Frost didn't pop right away, maybe it looks closer to a wash right now, but I think there's still chance. I think Joel Farabee's going to have a really strong bounce back next year. I think we still look back on that trade as a wise move by Conroy.
Steinberg and Wes along with you. So those are the kind of RFAs that are next on the docket for Craig Conroy. Still others, you know, UFAs and Dustin Wolf contract. There's still other things that's perhaps next on the checklist for Conroy, which we'll get into as the week goes along. Hey, can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer included them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
Flamestock is live on Calgary's hockey station, Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
Steinberg and Wes along with you as this Tuesday edition of the program continues. So we are now one game into round two of the Stanley Cup playoffs. And boy, oh boy, was there a lot to talk about coming out of game one of that 5-4 win for the Toronto Maple Leafs over the Florida Panthers. So much fun and lots of talking points. And... what world are we in? The Toronto Maple Leafs have a series lead outside of round one. Let's go down the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. Say hello to our buddy David Alter from the Hockey News and covering the Maple Leafs for the Hockey News in Toronto. Joins us on the program right now. DA, it is a pleasure. And, you know, it's I was thinking about this on my walk in today, knowing you were coming on, and I thought to myself, you know, I've known Dave for a couple decades now, going back to when we were kind of both working our way up the ranks, you at 590 in Toronto and me here. And I thought to myself, geez, the Maple Leafs are the playoff series lead. And Dave's been covering the Maple Leafs full time for about 15 years. And they've got a playoff series lead in round two. Like, this is it's uncharted territory for you, sir.
Yeah. You know, Pat, it's kind of weird to believe, and I got a lot of hate because I wasn't trying to make a point or anything, but in my bracket, I picked Ottawa over the Leafs. And the system that I use, it's not like a bias against the Leafs or anything like that, but the point that I was trying to make with picking the Sens in seven was that this was going to be a lot closer of a series than people were led to believe. And it was, like, even though the Leafs won the first three games and Ottawa wins the next two, you know, two of them are in overtime. Game six was tight, close, and tense, and Ottawa almost forced the game seven. Never had a lead, but got it tied in the third period. There's just that tension around Leaf fans feeling the hate whenever you go against the Leafs, that there's negativity and all that stuff. But as you mentioned, it's really just because not a lot has happened positively for this team in that last 15 years or so. So there's always been a, you know, if the leafiest way for things to happen. And
yeah.
So right now they've got one win and they've matched their total win total from the second round of 2 years ago. So they're, I guess, they're with house money in terms of how far they've gone. We'll see.
What and we'll get to the Sam Bennett conversation and Stolarz in a second, but just overall, what did you make of Toronto getting out to a big lead, Florida making it close, and all things considered, how did you see game one of this series?
I think it was a good learning lesson for the Maple Leafs that they were able to see evidence early that it wasn't going to be easy for them, because when they did have that 4-1 lead, it was pretty clear early in that third period that they just kind of stopped playing for and having that fight you early is good instead of having it happen later in the series.
So they got a pretty early warning sign, yet still came out on top that it's not going to come easy, despite the fact that you've run up the score here and Bobrovsky's not playing particularly well and all those things. So I like that, you know, they called the timeout. They bent, but they didn't break. And that's really been the story of the Leafs, is their ability to respond and keep their composure in a market that, you know, from the outside noise perspective, has not necessarily been good at that. So it's positive. I think they have as good a shot as anyone of the final eight teams right now, but we'll see what happens.
Where are we on the discourse that surrounds Sam Bennett's collision with Anthony Stolarz on Monday night, the lack of supplemental discipline, and the fallout from a Maple Leaf standpoint? Where are we on this whole situation, Dave?
It's a tough one. You know, our team over at the Hockey News, we're like going back on years of research of Sam Bennett and controversial hits and, you know, even going back to his time with Calgary, I think his name was Simic, who I haven't done the whole thing. In 2018, he hit someone hard and was given a match penalty for it. And Simic suffered a concussion. And
you are correct. It was Radek Simic. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So like, we're just starting to scratch the surface of all that research. Right. So we're looking at it and you know what? He's the type of player that just knows the line. That's what it is. Hockey is such a subjective sport that somehow he's crafted the line. I think a lot of Leaf fans would really be interested to see that if he ever became a Maple Leaf and he is an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season, if that line would still be the same. He's just, you know, from Marchand last year, I think he ran Skinner in the Cup final. Although Skinner, I don't believe, was hurt or had to miss any time. And then 2 years before that, with Matthew Knies knocking him out of the series that the two teams had 2 years ago, he's just been a player that plays rough. Now, the other thing to that is, was that necessarily what caused the concussion? Because, you know, he took a puck to the head. And I think the real fault lies with the whole concussion spotter syndrome, because when he took the first hit when he took that hit and he was slow to get up, I'm like, you know what? I wonder if they're going to have to get the spotter in here. And my initial instinct was when he came out of the game, because I didn't see him get sick on the bench till the intermission. But when he got pulled out of it, I thought the spotter pulled him out. And then I saw Elliot Friedman's reporting that, if the spotter pulled him out, Joseph Hall would have had a warm-up and all those other things. I think the real finger to blame here is the spotters here, because I know it's tight. You don't want to decide outcomes of games or whatnot, but, you know, he was showing signs of it 10 minutes before he himself or the team pulled him out of the game. And I think that's where the discourse should really be.
We're chatting with David Alter of the Hockey News in Toronto. Maple Leafs with a 1-0 series lead in round two over the Florida Panthers. He's joining us here on Flames Talk. It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you on this Tuesday, Wes.
David, if Anthony Stolarz isn't able to go for game two and then whatever that looks like from there, what is the level of confidence in Toronto right now in Joe Woll and his ability to, you know, maybe make sure that there wouldn't be much drop off there?
I think for the most part, the confidence is good or high. It's not as high as it would have been in the past. Like he kind of struggled a bit down the stretch where it was starting to become clear that Stolarz was going to become the starter for the playoffs, at least to start. But that being said, Joseph Woll has a great track record of playoff performances. He filled in for Samsonov and performed really well. And before last night, he had a save percentage of .933 in 7 appearances, I believe it is, in the playoffs. Has won 3 games where the team was facing elimination. So he knows the pressure. He can deal with those types of situations. It's just the long layoff, not knowing, you know, if he was going to be comfortable in that spot. And, you know, he let in a couple of bad goals that has got some people kind of wondering, okay, or is he going to be able to kind of finish this off? But I think the drop off between the two hasn't been that significant. And a lot of that is just a credit to how strong the team has been defensively, closing the interior and making sure there really aren't any second or third chances at the goaltenders and boosting their confidence that way. So, I mean, Stolarz is the preferred guy, no doubt. I would be surprised if he's able to play. I don't think he will tomorrow. But Joseph Woll is not like a backup, so to speak, in terms of capability. It really is a 1A, 1B, with Stolarz having a clear edge, but not necessarily starter versus backup. It's really both guys have shown that they can kind of carry the ball and run with it if they need be. And when Stolarz was hurt for 2 months, Joseph Woll played really well. So they have that going for them as well.
I think if you polled hockey fans here in Calgary about who they were cheering for in this series, any of them that answered the Maple Leafs, one of the big reasons would be Chris Tanev. He was certainly beloved here in Calgary for the way he sacrificed himself and his body and his seasons with the Flames. What's been, you know, beyond the goal last night, what's been Chris's impact?
2 points last night for Tanev.
And no smile, of course, but how would you describe his impact on that group there?
Talking to him, you can tell he's no nonsense.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and in a world where we work in a market where like a lot of players just give the cliche answers, he just doesn't do it. Like, he's refreshingly honest about situation, even if it's not a lot of words, even if it's a short response, his response is impactful. And I love that. I love guys who speak their mind like that. And I feel like that's just an extension of his personality that sticks into the room. And one of the other things, too, that really shines in someone like Chris Tanev, like, he was brought in to really remake that defense. Brad Treliving came in and wanted bigger defensemen than what Kyle Dubas kind of had philosophically, which was all puck movers, not necessarily the biggest guy in offense. So Chris Tanev comes in and he's blocking shots and he's eliminating chances and playing really well. But when Austin Matthews was asked a few weeks ago why what's been the real change? Why is it going to be different this time around in terms of the approach to the playoffs and all those things? And he pointed to the addition of Chris Tanev as like one of the biggest differences. And he's not usually someone who just brings up someone to single them out in the media. And like, to me, when a captain's doing that, that speaks volumes of just how the change of one particular key player has changed everything else. And, you know, Austin Matthews didn't score as much, and he's been dealing with stuff this season. But if he can point to someone who's kind of changed the way they play and they're getting better results and it's better team goals, it just speaks to the kind of impact that Tanev's had. He's from here. He gets what it's like, and he's been a perfect fit for this team.
There's the old Kevin Bieksa line that Tanev looks so relaxed he could probably smoke a cigarette while he was playing. Has that calm sort of, I know it's hard for us as reporters to really get a great read on it sometimes, but do you think he's had that sort of calming influence in some ways?
I do think there's that. I think Craig Berube has also been a big reason for that as well. I mean, obviously, if your coach is going to dictate a certain type of temperament, and he's effective, it's going to permeate throughout the room. But certainly, Tanev coming in there at the same time and also being that helps. Guys like Scott Laughton are very similar in that regard as well, that just kind of are chill, able to just kind of do the thing they need to do and not get caught up in the moment. And yeah, you see it. Like when the Leafs were up 3-0 and then it went down to 3-2, you know, you got a sense from a lot of those guys when talking to any of them, whether it was the core guys, but especially the depth guys, the new guys that were there, you know, they didn't, anytime a news reporter or someone tried to bring up the past or anything like that, they didn't get uptight about it. They addressed it calmly and coolly. And I think that was a big difference for them to not get lost in the moment like they have in previous playoff years where sometimes it would prove to be too much. So I'm seeing that now, the fact that they were able to just respond the way they do. It doesn't feel like like the worst is going to happen to this team, but this is also the first real issue where a core guy to some degree in Stolarz could be out for a bit. And we haven't really had that drama outside of a player dumping a puck down the ice in a warm-up, which was really nothing. So, we'll see how the Leafs respond to this, because this is every year there always used to be something with the Leafs that got in the way. Like last year, it was Nylander having migraines and missing the first three games, Austin Matthews getting sick, and that being a bit of a circus show. Where now this is the first real like big deal thing to happen to the Leafs, and let's see how they respond to it. So there's always that, but to answer your question a long-winded way, the guys that they brought in have had a calming presence that seemed to let them deal with this better. And I think the core guys have just benefited from another year of experience and also feeding off those guys as well.
Has this playoffs at all, and I know it certainly, we saw plenty of it during the regular season, but has this playoffs changed your thinking at all on maybe what Matthew Nyes can be at this level and just what a star the Leafs might have there?
Yeah, that's a tough one too, because 2 years ago, you know, he made his debut with two games remaining in the regular season, maybe three. And then, you know, his first real touch or flavor of play, like of NHL was the playoffs. So, and he impressed then. Like, he didn't look like he was kind of caught up for the moment. He just looked like he was built for this type of hockey. And so the last year he struggled with it. It was first full year in the NHL. And there were times where he just couldn't find his fit, that he actually dropped down to the fourth line for like the final third of the season. Like, a lot of people forget that. And I think it was just the philosophical role that Sheldon Keefe kind of had him in there, where it just didn't seem like he kind of found a fit or where he was supposed to belong, or all those kind of things. Where here, you know, his hands have gotten better, his speed, his timing has gotten better. Now he's got this breakaway speed along with his size that just make him the, you know, he could be like, if he adds a little bit more edge to him, he could be like a Tom Wilson, like that the Leafs have not really ever had, like in that regard. But also, you know, putting up a lot of goals and being able to provide and playing with skilled athletes. So, yeah, the sky could be the limit. But I don't, like, it's early still. Like, he goes through these spurts, and I'm curious to see if he just follows this up with another, like, 30-goal year. Because as good as he's been, there have been lulls. But it looks like he's playing to a system and growing his confidence. And he's a player that is just like anyone, tied to his confidence. If he goes through a stretch where he hasn't scored in a bit, it kind of permeates for a long time. And so he certainly can go more. I don't know if he can go 40. I think a lot of what he's been able to do has been a product of the guys that he's playing with, but it's certainly not a knock either, because he really has been well above what anyone expected when the Leafs drafted him in the second round.
We're chatting with David Alter. One more for you, Dave. Dave, joining us from Toronto and the Hockey News. Maple Leafs have a 1-0 series lead on Florida heading into game two. What now becomes, if we're not expecting Stolarz to start, it goes Joe Woll in net. We saw the rough stuff that ended the game. You talked about kind of the wake-up call that Toronto got in Florida, being able to come back on them. Just what becomes now the big challenge for the Maple Leafs as they play game two on home ice against this Panthers group?
To not get caught up in any sort of shenanigans, really. But that's where Berube's coaching or mentality and all the other guys really kind of clicks in. Like, I remember Domi took a bit of a dumb penalty in that first game. They were able to kill it off and everything was kind of fine. But they can't let themselves try to send a message and then it costs them. So, like, I think that's really the big difference right now, is make sure, you know, you keep playing the game. Don't do anything different. Play with the emotion, but don't let any of what's said or anything out there, don't get baited into stuff. Brad Marchand is out there for that reason. And I'm sure he's going to try to bait the Leafs into something. And really, it's just going to be Florida knowing that they've got to have to start on time. And really, they need better goaltending too, because I think that played a lot of what happened in last night's game. So the Leafs will just have to kind of be better in all those other aspects. It sounds ridiculous to say, but Now that you have Joseph Wall in there, I think they're confident that he can still do what he has to do, but they might have to just adjust the way they cycle out the puck more, because Stallers is more of a, you know, he's a give and go, more yelling at the guys, getting involved in the cycling and defensive kind of things, where Joseph Wall kind of more stay at home. So I'm curious to see how that dynamic will change things.
Dave Alter is on Twitter at DAlter or Dalter. And not only are you going to get comprehensive coverage on this series, but also media meals. And so I'm looking forward
to... Oh, my goodness.
I'm looking forward to...
I was hoping you'd bring that up.
I'm looking forward to Game 3 in Florida. Like, what does Game 3 Round 2 look like for a road media meal? I'm looking forward.
Well, did you see yesterday's? It was a travesty.
I did. I took a little bit of a ride, hey?
Yeah, and because a lot of the vendors went cashless, they couldn't even take, even in normal hours, they couldn't even take the voucher. So it wasn't well planned. I don't think I'm going to do it. And it used to be free vouchers, which was a great proposition, right? Like, that's, you don't look a gift horse in the mouth when it's free. But I don't know. The Florida meal is usually pretty decent. And I'm curious to see if they step it up. They also have like meal upstairs. They have like finger foods upstairs, which I'm really excited about. So, yeah, the weather's good here now in Toronto, but I'm excited to hit the beach for that day off between Game 3 and 4 for sure.
100%. Enjoy the rest of the series, Dave. Awesome catching up with you, man. Thanks so much for doing this on a Tuesday. Appreciate it, pal.
Yeah, you got it, Pat. Wes, thank you so much.
David Alter is on Twitter at DAlter. Catch all his coverage of the Maple Leafs and the NHL at the Hockey News. Joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast, or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. One of my favorite guys going all the way back. I've known him for good probably 20 years now, known Dave. And you want to talk about a guy who hustles. There's nobody in the business who hustles like David Alter.
We all like to think in the media that we hustle pretty hard during the season, but when Dave comes to town, I think we see otherwise.
Yeah. Dude's a legend. Thanks to Dave for joining us. Game 2 of that series between Toronto and Florida goes on Wednesday night, back to 5 o'clock. It was a 6 o'clock start on Monday for the draft lottery. It's a 5 o'clock start on Wednesday, leading right into, how about the local start time in Winnipeg for Game 1 of the Jets and Stars? 8:50 local. For Jets
Love
and
that,
Stars.
Hey?
We're used to it here. Whenever the Flames are in the playoffs, it's 8:48, 8:50 starts, especially in round one. But we're used to that because we get a lot of 8 games anyway on Saturdays and midweek. But
yeah,
you've never done an 8:50 before. You're like, whew, that's a late start.
Well, and when you're playing a team that it makes sense for their market too, you can sort of understand it. But that's a crappy start in both Dallas
markets,
and Winnipeg.
Both Central's time zones, so both almost 9 o'clock start times for both Dallas and Winnipeg.
Not ideal.
Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Thanks to Cam Hughes, Shan Vergie, our outstanding producers this hour. Starting to wrap things up this hour has been the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. The moving sale is on now. Save big on safe, smart locks, keypads, and more. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.